the dark days are done and the bright days are here. My sunny one shines so sincere. Sunny one so true.
Our next guest is one of those rare talents who has something to say and can say it funny. He's a writer-performer on the new Laugh-In and one of the most popular, outspoken, and entertaining personalities on the local news here in Los Angeles. He's won a half a dozen Emmys as a film critic and host of his own shows. Let's welcome Mr. John Barber, right over there.
Thank you. That was Sarita singing Sonny, and that was Frank Sinatra hosting the Tonight Show saying, "Here's Johnny." This is John Barber. Welcome to John Barber's World, the 23rd of January on a Monday. In a moment, I'm more than truly delighted to say we are going to be talking to the most popular radio talk show host in Los Angeles. But first, I have a couple of things to say and a very important question to ask you. What happened in the news over the weekend and in the White House was, for me, almost as indigestible and as tough to look at as an In-N-Out burger. Trump burger is in, Obama burger is out. Now, the best thing you can say about Obama's departure is that, unlike the Clintons, he didn't steal anything. But he should have. He should have taken those gold curtains. Did you see those things? The White House looks like Liberace's dressing room. The gold curtains, sadly, the only real change Obama brought to the White House. He did not lie about bringing us hope, though, because now that he's gone, that hope may be Donald Trump. Now, maybe not to me, but to millions who voted for him. And with Trump's ego, he may just put on one of those gold curtains as a cape. It would go great with that hair. Over the weekend, you saw more women marching all over the country against Trope than to a half-off sale at Walmart. None marched, though, here in Vegas, because what happens in Washington stays in Vegas. So this is my question, and I posted it on Facebook the other day, and with hours, I got more than 200 comments and shares, and it is this. As someone who really and truly does not understand women, could someone out there who does answer this very simple question? As far as I know, President Trump has never been accused of rape. President Clinton has, a couple of times. Yet thousands and thousands of women protested Trump's reputation as a groper. But not one lady protested Clinton's rapes. Does this mean women find groping more offensive? And after that, I saw a video posted by a guy who said he was a self-described atheist who, for the first time, was going to pray to God. He was going to pray to God that he hoped Trump would keep his promise about repealing NAFTA, which I guess everybody hopes for, but I posted to him, like every Christian and Jew and Muslim I've ever seen, doing the same, praying to God, he's going to have to wait a long time for an answer. When I was starting out as a performer, I was inspired by watching dozens of outstanding comedians and personalities on early television, sadly no longer a medium for such talents. One in particular lit up the screen on the early Steve Allen show. Then as Harvey Korman's irreplaceable, irrepressible partner on the Carol Burnett show. Then as my golf instructor as Dorf. A few years ago, I had the fortune to co-star with him on a CSI where I played his replaceable partner. So he murdered me. This artist raised our pleasure meter and a half a dozen kids, and amongst them, an amazing son who does the same, lighting up talk show radio on KFI in Los Angeles, Monday through Friday from 6 to 10. Probably the only talk show host who also talks to kids, and now he's talking to me. Mort Lachman, Bob Hope's head writer for 20 years and my neighbor for a long time, once introduced me as America's maturest 8-year-old. Folks, America's radio talk show treasure and a talent I am happy to say who is as successful in his medium as his father was in his, Tim Conway Jr. Tim, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Only allowed a half hour, and after that that introduction, I'm here for two more minutes. You are the king of the long introductions. I honor you for that.
Thank you. Okay, quick first question.
Okay.
As the father of a teenage daughter, do you know anything more about women?
You know, I don't. The reason why you have kids is because about every 6 to 7 years, they do something cute, and you're like, oh, that's why I have them. All right, that's pretty cool. But no, I had my daughter later on in life. I was in my 40s when we had Sophia, and it changed my life. My wife and I never wanted to have kids. Now, when I had my daughter, it changed my life, and the greatest thing that's ever happened to me by a billion light years is having my daughter.
Why did you not want children?
Well, I grew up with four younger brothers and an older sister, and so that was before antidepressants, when moms couldn't take a pill to really enjoy the process, and so a lot of that came out in anger and a lot of discipline and a lot of craziness, and so I thought I may try to skate through without kids. Then we had our daughter, and it was the greatest thing that's ever happened by far.
Okay, so now you did because of your background, you didn't want a child. How about that of your wife? Did she not want a child either?
She sort of grew up with the same crazy household, so she didn't care either way either. And then, you know, when you get pregnant and you do give birth, this little tiny, you know, naked homeless person comes home with you with no ability to make any money or feed themselves or wipe themselves. It's a great deal.
Well, Tim, I must tell you, in my life, I found that all the greatest things that ever happened to me happened by accident, but all the really terrible things were those things that were well planned. So was Sophia an accident, or was she planned?
Well, I hope she's not listening. No, it wasn't a plan, but it wasn't an accident either. We just said, you know, if we naturally have children, we will, and if we don't, we won't. But not one of those stressed out couples that spends, you know, 4 years trying every which way and then going to doctors and lawyers and everything. That's a mess. That's a tough way to have kids. But it really, truly is. I was listening to some music last night, and some of the greatest songs ever written are about the father's relationship with the daughter. And I think that's the strongest bond in the world. I think brother and sister, uncle, you know, niece, those are all great relationships. But I think father-daughter is truly, the people I've spoken to that have both sons and daughters, the father-daughter relationship is truly the greatest.
Well, I would have liked to have had a daughter for one reason, because I would have liked to have taught my daughter the facts of life. I think it's a mistake.
No, it's very comfortable.
Huh?
Very comfortable situation.
Well, the thing is that I don't think the mother should be telling the daughter the facts of life, because quite often the mothers really don't know how to please a man. I mean, I hate to say that publicly. Now, I'll tell you, in my case, I was 36 when my wife became pregnant. I came from a severely, severely broken home long before it was popular. And so when I got into the business and was struggling, I told my wife, I do not want a child. I never want a child. And my heroes in television were Jack Parr. That's one of the reasons I wanted to get into television. I couldn't believe you could actually make a living talking to people. And in a moment, I'm going to get to a really great story of yours. But what happened is I had been offered a game show at ABC for $1,750 a week, and I was making nothing. And I turned it down because they didn't want me to ask humorous questions the way that Jack Parr did, or the way that Johnny Carson did on Who Do You Trust Your Wife? I got home. We'd been together for 3 years, and my wife, next to Ginger Rogers, the greatest female tap dancer I ever saw, turned down Broadway shows, movies, everything. Anyway, she'd do a song and dance for me when she'd open the door, which was adorable. And I told her I turned the job down, and tears rolled down her face. And she just blurted out, that means we can't have a child. Well, I felt, Tim, I felt so miserable and guilty. I said, okay, we tried it my way, honey, for 3 years. We'll try it your way for 3 years. Little did I realize what I was saying, that the kid just doesn't last 3 years. And like you, I must tell you, my fortunes changed because within 2 weeks, Westinghouse had signed me as Murr's replacement. Now, when you, your wife got pregnant and you said it was the greatest thing that ever happened to you, aside from fulfilling you as a human being, because now you get out of your own way and you have to take care of this little homeless thing, did your luck or your fortunes change as all these old wives' tales tell us they do?
Well, similar to your life, when we had our child, I got a call from Merv Griffin Productions. They wanted me to replace Pat Sajak on Wheel of Fortune. Isn't that crazy?
Oh, my God. I worked with Pat. You know that he used to model priest collars?
You know, I didn't know that, John. I was unaware of that that aspect of Pat.
Well, I'll tell you something else. Kelly Lang, who was our weather girl on the Tom Snyder Show, the Channel 6 News,
she used to
model bras for Fredericks Hall of Hollywood.
I bet they never ran into each other at photo shoots.
Okay, now, the question about children. I know you don't want to toot your own horn, so I presume, probably because of your background with your brothers and your sister, you have somehow managed on your show to encourage phone calls from kids.
Yes.
Is that one of the reasons? Why is it? And I saw you. Listen, I know you don't want to blow your own horn, so I'm going to blow an orchestra pit full of horns for you to let people know how much impact and influence you have on that audience in Los Angeles. And I applaud you for putting it to such good use. Tell the story. I saw you on the KTLA morning show, telling this wonderful story about this young boy who called in to say how much he loved his mother and why. Please tell us that story.
Oh, it's one of the great stories. Well, first of all, to back up and answer the first part of your question, the reason why I encourage kids to call is I used to be a big fan of talk radio when I was a kid because I was punished a lot. So the only thing I had to do was turn the radio on and listen to KBC and, you know, Michael Jackson or, you know, any of the guys, Larry King on it at late at night. And so I love talk radio, but I would call and they would ask me how old I was. And I said, you know, 13 years old. And they said, well, call us back when you're 18. We're not putting anybody on who's under 18. So I said, well, if I ever get a job in radio, I'm never going to do that. I'm going to allow all these kids to call up because it's a real special moment for them when they get on the air and they realize how many people are listening to them. It's really cool for them. But a kid calls us up. We do a thing every Thursday called What the Hell Did Jesse Jackson Say? Where we play Jesse Jackson clips, and you have to figure out what he's saying. And it truly has become a huge hit. We've been doing it for about 16 or 17 years. And kids love to play it, and they're better at it because their minds aren't cluttered with the stuff that, you know, all the stuff that mine is and yours. So they're more pure, and they understand what Jesse Jackson is saying, and they get it, you know, 9 out of 10 times. So a kid calls us up right before Thanksgiving, and I always give the kids an opportunity at the end, tell us why your mom and dad are so great. Well, he said his dad was in heaven, and I said, well, tell me why your mom is the greatest mom in the world. And he said, because she feeds me and she buys me clothes. Now, we've never had a kid say that before. We've never, and that means there's very little money around the house, and yet he has a great bond and a great relationship with his mom. And so he also spent his recent birthday in the hospital because he has a heart defect, and his mother was in the hospital too. So it was just a bad year for them. And so we said, all right, we're going to pass the hat around here at KFI and see if we can raise enough money to buy you a little, you know, birthday gift. And so then we got a ton of email and people online saying, can I donate? Can I, you know, throw in, you know, my services or make a donation? How can I do this? So we put together a GoFundMe page, and we wanted to raise enough money to send this kid and his mom to Disney World, which they've never been to before, for Christmas. So our goal was $5,000, and we put it up on a Friday night at 7 o'clock, and we said, all right, in the next 2 weeks, let's try to raise $5,000 for this kid, Jack Chavez, and his mom. Well, in the first 10 minutes, we got $6,000.
Wow. Wow.
It blew up, and the first 5 days, we had to cut it off because it was just sort of getting a little over the top. In the first 5 days, we raised $63,000 for this kid.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, okay. Now, when you have $63,000, how is it delivered to this boy and his mother? And is there somebody that you attach to them who helps supervise the spending of that money? What did the boy want to buy first when he got it?
Well, I take half of it as a finder's fee, so I get 31. what we did is we connected with GoFundMe. You can set a person to collect the money, and that person was his mom. And we had her in studio and in the station to kind of, look at her and get a feel for what she was like, make sure she wasn't, addicted to heroin or whatever. And she's a very nice woman. Prayer is a big part of their life. They prayed before they went on the air that night. And then when they came in studio to meet everybody, they prayed before they went on the air as well. And they asked for very few things in life. She has her husband died 3 years ago, put it on the services on
Line
a credit
three.
Card, and she was still paying off those bills 3 years later. Now, can you imagine that? I mean, the hardship. And so I said, there are a lot of kids out there that have bigger problems than, should I get the iPhone 6 or the iPhone 7? And so we want to concentrate on those kids. But that kid was so humble and so happy to get that kind of money. But further than that, he called, and the prize for kids that night is a gift certificate for 2 scoops of ice cream from Farrell's. So after we told him you got $60,000, after we went off the air, he said to me, he goes, the money's great and everything, but where are those ice cream certificates? You guys still got those from me?
That's fabulous. Well, I know that you encourage phone calls. I seldom, if ever, encourage phone calls, but sometimes people are driven by the guest to find the number and call in.
Sure.
I have no idea who's calling, Tim. He's on line three or she's on line three. Do you mind if we take the call out of curiosity?
Sure, absolutely. I'm sure this is the guy I owe money to for crashing into his motorhome
well,
over the weekend.
He heard you got the finder's fee. Go ahead, line three.
I have a question for Tim Conway Jr. I send you email from time to time to comment on your show, but my question is, I've been listening to you for maybe the past year since I discovered the live stream and your show on it, and you say something that puzzles me. You say, ding dong with you! Ding dong with you, Tim Conway! And I don't know what in the world you're... What is that? What's the origin of that, and what's it supposed to mean?
All right, great, great question. Great caller with a lot of knowledge. I like that about your show, Johnny. Here's what it is. When I was at the racetrack when I was a kid, I started going to the racetrack when I was probably about a year old. My dad, the rule was we can't go before we turn a year old, which is nice. You want to raise kids properly. But when I was at the racetrack when I was a kid, if there's a 9-horse field, and they're coming down the final turn into the home stretch, and 2 horses separate from the field. And so there's 7 behind, and the 2 are, 10 lengths ahead of everybody. And with every stride, there's a new winner, to the 5 and 6 horse, 6-5, 5-6, 6-5, 5-5, 6-5, 6, and you can't tell who's going to win the race. The old-timers at the track will yell out, we've got a ding-dong, which means, with every stride, there's a new leader. Well, one night, I was talking about a guy who murdered his wife in San Diego. And I thought, this guy is really a gruesome guy. I can't believe it. And then I read the story further, and she tried to kill him because she was stealing money from him. Like, oh, man, wait a minute. Maybe this guy's onto something. And then I keep reading. I'm like, no. He's the aggressor. No, she is. Wait a minute. He is. She is. I'm like, we got a ding-dong. And so I said that, and Matt Money Smith, who works on KLAC, a sports station here in town, 570 AM, he said he was driving home, and he heard me tell that story and yell out ding-dong, and he said he had to pull off the freeway because he was laughing so hard. I would have never said it twice unless he said, you got to go with that. And since then, it's taken off like a wildfire. I mean, I walk into a restaurant, once a year when somebody, recognizes, me because I'm wearing a KFI shirt with Conway on my hat, and they'll yell out across the restaurant, ding-dong with you. So
there you go, Tim. There you go. Another happy accident. Now, to let you know that I was paying attention to what you were saying before you started to tell the story about Jock about getting his $62,000 or $63,000. You said I was punished as a kid.
Sure.
How were you punished as a kid, and why?
I probably deserved about 90% of them. Unable to follow a lot of the rules. For instance, when I was in elementary school and I was taking acorns and just, you know, throwing them at other kids, it wasn't a big deal. An acorn weighs, the weight of a penny or so. And the teacher caught me and said, you're throwing acorns at kids. I said, well, I'm just lobbing them once in a while, it hits a kid. And she said, okay, your punishment is to take this huge bag, this Ralph's grocery bag, and fill it up with acorns, and you sit out here in the playground until it's full. Well, my mom comes onto the campus at that time unexpectedly, and she sees me doing this. And she says, what's going on with you? And I said, well, Mrs. Bernstein said we have an art project, and we need a whole bag full of acorns, so she selected me because I was the smarter kid in the class to go out and collect these acorns. And she bought it. And so I thought, wow, that's the value of lying. That is really, I learned that pretty early on in life. But a lot of times I couldn't get out of it.
That's right out of Huckleberry Finn and Tom Sawyer. That is so funny.
I couldn't get out of it sometimes as a kid. So I was, told to go to my room, come down for dinner, and then go back to my room. So I listened to talk radio all the time. I listened to Vin Scully, and Vin Scully would be calling the Dodger game. And I remember I had a green bedspread, and I was a big Dodger fan and a big fan of collecting baseball cards. So I'd collect all the baseball cards. And so while I'm listening to Vin Scully on my headphones, I have my Dodger baseball cards and my Cincinnati Red baseball cards. They have to be playing each other that night. And I'd move the cards around. I'd tape off the bases and the foul lines. And I'd move the cards around so I can actually see the game on my mattress while I'm listening to Vin Scully. And then and just sort of fell in love with the ability to tell stories and listen. It really is great. Well, you know.
Well, you could not have listened to a greater voice call a baseball game than Vin Scully. My God.
The best. Unbelievable. I mean, what, 67 years or so with the same club?
Yeah, just amazing. So it seems that you were always interested in radio. Was that always your interest as a youngster? Did you not want to play baseball because you listened to it? Did you not want to do something else? Were you interested in getting into your father's business? Did any of your siblings get into your father's business?
Well, I wanted to play baseball. I was a pitcher when I was a kid. I was 12, 13 years old. We were playing Little League, and I pitched a perfect game, 6 innings of no hit. Nobody got on, no hits, nothing. And, the team, surrounds you. They throw the gloves, and everybody's great. So I went back home, and my dad had missed the game because he was working on the Carol Burnett show. He had 9 people to feed, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So I gave him an excuse every time he couldn't make it to a game. But so I said to him that night, I said, Dad, I said, I pitched a perfect game. I think I got something here. I want to pursue baseball. And he sat me down, and he said, Tim, you're not that good.
Oh, my God. That's terrible.
I said, what are you talking about? And he said, you're striking out kids that could never – that, first of all, can't even see. all these kids are wearing glasses. None of them are going on to play professional sports, and you're not that good. I'm saving you a life of hell, a life of disaster. And it turns out he did. I didn't have the ability to play, baseball. I didn't have the drive, or I didn't have the physical skills. And he pointed that out. A little tough love, but, man, look what he did. He saved my life.
Well, the truth of the matter is, had you wanted it, you would have told your father to go back and entertain Carol Burnett that you're going to go out there and pitch a no-hitter.
That's exactly right. I think he stole this line from Rodney Dangerfield. He said, Tim, you've got humor in your blood. Too bad it's not on your show.
As a youngster, did the word junior ever bother you?
It never really did. But first of all, it really was rarely used because my dad's legal name is Tom Conway. So my legal name isn't really Tim Conway Jr. But when he came out, when my father, Tom Conway, came out from Cleveland, Ohio with his buddy Ernie Anderson, and they wanted to make it in show business, there was already a Tom Conway in show business, so he had to change it to Tim Conway, and Steve Allen gave him the suggestion. Steve said, instead of Tom, go with Tim. And then, so he changed his name, and hence, so it wasn't really a big problem growing up. But the nice thing about having a father, you know, like mine, Tim Conway, is that I've never heard not a single person has ever approached me talking about what an a-hole my dad was, or how you can't work with him, or you can't stand him. It was all great, positive stories of people who absolutely loved him personally and professionally.
Well, from working with him, I must tell you, it was the most adorable time. It's really a strange adjective to use from a man, but it was the most adorable time I ever felt in the business. I felt totally comfortable with him. Now, he was a major star compared to me. As a matter of fact, he got paid 10 times more than I got paid.
Wow.
But he was, I got $6,000. He got $60,000. But I must tell you, he was and is absolutely adorable. I caught him a few years ago when he came to Las Vegas to do his show, and he was fabulous in the show. He was fabulous afterward. You were really lucky. Now, when did you realize, as a youngster, you start going to school, when did you realize that you were coming from a family and a father that was a little different from the others?
Well, I think it started in junior high school. One of the kids in school asked if, you know, they could have my dad's autograph, and I said, yeah, I'm not sure why you want it, but sure. So my dad signed a piece of paper. And I brought it to school, and I was going to give it to the kid, and the teacher said, Tim, do you have a note for being absent yesterday? And I said, yeah, I think I do. So I put above the signature, please excuse Tim from yesterday, he had the flu, and I gave it to her. She matched the signatures and never questioned it. Well, since that date, I asked my dad, you know, all the time, hey, can I get another autograph from you and then take it to school? Can you please excuse Tim from Friday? He's got a dentist appointment.
It's the old acorn in the bag trick.
But he got smart and eventually would sign a photograph of himself, and it's very tough to write an excuse note on a photograph.
Okay, now you become a little bit older. You get a little interested. When were you first interested in girls, and were you interested in girls before you were interested in any kind of job?
Well, I came to the game a little late. I was in the Girls Hater Club in about fourth grade when all my friends were, chasing them around. So I came to the game a little late. But I remember I had a girlfriend break up with me. She left a note on my windshield saying, you know, you're out. And now, you know, since then, that's the way I broke up with girls. I found it very convenient. Plus, if it doesn't rain, you're gold.
I must tell you, I was going to ask you to tell that story because
that's a true story.
I saw it in a clip, and your poor father was sitting to the left of you listening to you telling the story. That's great. How old were you when that happened?
I was about 13 or 14, but I went to talk to my dad about it, and he was doing the Carol Burnett show, so he was, you know, backstage getting ready for his, the next sketch, and he was going to be playing an Avon lady. So he's trying to give me advice on women while he's putting on pantyhose, a bra, and lipstick.
That's terrific. What was your first job? Did your father and your mother say, hey, you have to get a job, or did they give you an allowance, or did you have to earn your own? And what were some of your early jobs before you finally ended up in radio?
Well, I lied to get my first job because that's the only way you get allowance in our
house.
Well,
you were really good at lying.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, listen, I'm Pat Conway. I'm not even Tim Conway Jr.'s, but you don't even know that. No, but anyway, seriously, I lied to get on my age. I told him I was 16. To get my first job at Amber's Chicken, cooking chicken. But before that, I worked at a place called Jackrabbit Press, and before that, Arco Gas Station. But when I was working for Jackrabbit Press, they did stationery, high-end stationery for offices in Encino, and I was the guy in charge of delivering them all. So I'd take a cart or a truck and drive around to these offices, and I remember I had a dolly with me, and I had all this stuff on it, so I walk into one office, and I give them their stationery, and I come out, and the dolly's empty. Somebody had stolen two boxes of stationery. So I went back to Jackrabbit Press, and they said, well, you've got to pay for it. And I said, oh, okay. So it was more than my paycheck. So I asked my dad the next day, I said, hey, I need to borrow $28. And he said, what for? I said, for work. And I told him the story. And he said, you know, you getting a job is going to be too expensive for me. You know, the old adage of, and again with Rodney Dangerfield, somebody stole my wife's credit cards, but I didn't report it because they spend much less.
That's so funny. Okay, now, when was the first chance? Did you apply for any kind of a job at a radio station, or did you actually audition for something and get a job? Your first time?
I started an internet radio show called IfNet or LateNet in 1993 or 94. And nobody had the ability to download any big video or audio packages because the bandwidth wasn't there. So we, again, I know there's a pattern here, John, but we told everybody that we had 400,000 or 500,000 people listening every night. And People Magazine picked up on it, and they wrote a story, and they quoted our number of 400,000 to 500,000 people. And then Entertainment Weekly picked up on it, then CBS and NBC, and they all did stories about it. So one of the program directors was listening to or watching TV one night and saw this. I came out to do our show late night, and then got to know him, and he hired myself and my partner, Doug Steckler, in 1996 on Christmas Eve to fill in for Pharrell on the Bench and do 9 p.m. to midnight. And then fill in work here and there, and then all of a sudden we got a full time job. And so December 23rd of last year, 2016, marked 20 years in doing this.
Well, I must tell you, when Sophia, is her name Sophia or Sophie?
Yes. So she changed it to Sophie, but her legal name is my grandmother's name. My dad's mother's name is Sophia.
Okay, when Sophia graduates from college, I think the gift that you should give her is a plaque with just 9 commandments on it. Forget thou shalt not lie. It has made you a lifetime and
that's
a career.
That's great. You know, I've decided on my tombstone, I'm going to have a hand of cards. It's going to be ace, king, queen, jack, 9. Busted straight.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, I can't top that, but I've already outlined my tombstone as a golfer and as somebody who's borderline agnostic. My tombstone is going to read, another lousy lie. So
that's great.
There you go. Tim, I want to thank you so much. I mean, I haven't even gotten started with the stuff that's in my head about I want to talk to you about.
Well, let's do it again one day.
Oh, I would love to do that. In about 6 weeks or so, I'd love to have you come back on the show. You're just an absolute and total delight. Tell your father hello from me. And again, thank you. And you know what? I'm going to say goodbye to you. I'm sorry you're going to miss Joe Satilli. He's totally brilliant. I saw a young Canadian golfer who won his first PGA golf tournament a little while ago. He said one of the smartest things I've ever heard, young guy. He said, success can never be owned. It can only be rented, and you have to pay the rent every single day.
Oh, that's great.
Isn't that wonderful? Tim, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, John.
I hope to talk to you again in about 6 weeks. Go do your show where you're a smash. Thanks again.
I really appreciate it. The honor of come on your show. Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
We'll be right back with Joe Satilli.
Great music from all the greatest performers from sunup to sundown.
How do you keep the music playing?
At last.
Well, beyond the sea.
Then, great talk all night. The mysteries of UFOs. Conspiracy theories and the true story of Las Vegas that has never been told.
There are three ways to listen to KIYQ. go to the TuneIn app, just search for KIYQ, or go to www.kiyq.org. Listen from any telephone, call 605-477-2857. That's 605-477-2857. Long distance charges may apply.
KIYQ 107.1.
Hi, this is John Barber of John Barber's World every other Monday at 5 p.m. Pacific right here on VBS Radio. I'm telling you about a terrific show, The New Criminal Minds with outstanding actor Gary Sinise, called Criminal Minds Beyond Borders, a tough drama about a special unit of the FBI involved in protecting Americans who are beyond borders. It follows the regular Criminal Minds, airing every Wednesday at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 Central. Don't miss it. Gary Sinise is outstanding.
Hi, I'm Richard Belzer. This is the great VBS Radio.
Thank you for that smile upon your face, oh Sonny.
Hi, this is John Barber. You may remember me as the co-host, producer, and creator of Real People, America's first reality show, or most recently as the writer-director of what's been called the definitive documentary on JFK's murder, The Last Word on the Assassination. Now I'm doing a show every other Monday from 5 to 6 Pacific Time on BBS. You'll hear provocative views, unreported news, and film reviews from me with outstanding guests and you. Join me on John Barber's World.
You're listening to BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com.
Those of you who have an ongoing interest in the JFK assassination might want to know about this. TV producer John Barber. He put together a dream team of JFK researchers, including Coast regular Jim Mars and world-class JFK writers Dick Russell and Joan Mellon. They all got together at UNLV in front of a live audience. They had a screening of Barber's terrific, and I'd say historic, film based on interviews with prosecutor Jim Garrison of New Orleans. And then after the film was shown, the experts all talked about the latest JFK theories and evidence. It's now out on a DVD. Terrific stuff. I'm George Knack, Coast to Coast AM.
Hi, welcome back to John Barber's World. You just listened to the irrepressible, adorable Tim Conway Jr., and we'll be talking to Tim again in a few more weeks. And right now, we're going to be talking to the brightest newsman, journalist, and writer I know. He's the most articulate. He's the most entertaining. He is, as you know, my sidekick cohort on the show, without whom I could not do the show. And when it comes to what happened over the weekend in America about Trump and the demonstration, nobody can articulate it better or look at it more interestingly than my friend Joe Satilli. Joe, welcome to the show. And first of all, good news on your biopsy. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you very much. There was a little bit of a thought that I might have nodules. I have these nodules in my thyroid and went to an ENT. And she said, well, I know you're a journalist. Have you been to Fukushima lately?
Oh,
that's not
God.
The kind of question that you want to get from an ENT.
Not very funny.
Yeah. So, no, they turned out to be benign. And so that's great news. That was the best news to come out of Friday from Trump the Eradicator, who would like to eradicate radical Islamic terrorism from the face of the earth.
And also eradicate income tax returns requirements.
Yeah, that's right.
The President of the United States. So I have this question to you that I posed rhetorically at the top of the show and I put on my Facebook page. Why did no women protest the President Clinton's alleged rapes, and yet by the thousand they are protesting simple gropes? Now, I hate to use the word simple, but they're just gropes, okay?
Well,
why is it? Is there something going on that I'm not aware of? I mean, I hear people talking about, well, Soros funded it, but not even he has that much.
No, Soros did not fund this. No, this actually started with a Facebook posting by one woman in Hawaii, and this was all around the world. I think that this is really an interesting question, actually, to me, because I've been aware, acutely aware of politics going all the way back to the Watergate hearings. I think there are a couple things at play. One, you see the reemergence of feminism actually after a period of it being lost in the wilderness because it failed to stand up during the Clinton years. I think organized feminism, not personal feminism that women may hold dear, but organized feminism, National Organization for Women and others, really dropped the ball during the final 4 years of the Clinton administration because they did not turn out in force to criticize the president at that time. And I think that left them on the moral low ground, not the moral high ground, for a period of time. So I think that there's a recovery of that feeling. That's one thing. Number two, I think for guys like us, when we think of somebody coming up and grabbing our genitals without us asking, we think that that's actually kind of okay. There are a lot of guys that may be the only way they ever get their genitals grabbed. For women, to have somebody brag about that openly, I think President Clinton never bragged about what he did. He denied what he did. To hear Trump bragging about the power that he has to grab women without them asking, that is, I think, to them, that reminds them of every scumbag in the break room who leers at them, every guy who's ever cornered them in a room, every guy who's ever gotten away with slapping them on the ass. So that there's that. And then there's a third thing, which is, I think, a generational thing. I think the women who did not turn out or were not vociferously against Clinton in the 90s were the baby boomers. I think what you are seeing now is a generational handoff to my generation, the Gen Xers, and to the generation behind us, the millennials, who were not really on the hook for not saying something during the Clinton years because those were still the baby boomer years. And I think this is a generational handoff.
One of the things that I truly liked about President Carter was his honesty and his restraint when he said, "I have lust in my heart." So he probably is speaking for every male, heterosexual or otherwise.
Sure.
But now that you've made that point, I remember Trump saying that, and I thought, how silly. But I guess to some women, it is highly repugnant that somebody would brag about such a thing.
Yeah, because it's also about power, because women in positions, whether it's somebody who's physically imposing or above them in a corporate pecking order or on a job site, that kind of abuse of power is something that resonates with a lot of women. And then, oh, by the way, I think one of the things that may have stoked those protests a little bit more was the fact that Donald Trump did not do anything in that inaugural speech to reach out to anybody. I mean, it was a quadrupling down of his campaign rhetoric when people were I think he's got like 45% approval rating, the lowest approval rating of any incoming president in the history of approval ratings. I think that even with that, even people who are staunchly against him know, look, he is a deal maker. And a lot of the people who are against him go, you know, we kind of are a little bit bent out of shape about free trade, so-called free trade. And a lot of us voted for Bernie Sanders. And we kind of like when he says things about getting big pharma to stop gouging us with prices and all these things. There are these little opportunities that he has there to bridge some gaps. And he never takes them. He never makes that effort. And I think that also then continues to stoke sort of the perpetual machinery.
And yet, if you look at a lot of the posts on the internet and on Facebook, a lot of people are saying, you know, I didn't necessarily vote for Trump, but I sort of liked his speech because it sounded populist. Did it sound populist to you?
Well, to me, Here's one thing. There are two things that stood out. I made a joke at the top about Trump the Eradicator. To me, whenever I hear anybody say we're going to eradicate X from the face of the earth, unless he's talking about cancer, I get a little bit squeamish. Because we're talking about eliminating human beings, no matter what you're talking about. We're eradicating human beings. But the one that stands out to me is he talked about how the wealth of the middle class was taken from them and spread around the world. And I was like, no, the wealth of the middle class was actually taken from them, and it's in most of your cabinet, in their bank accounts.
That's true.
And see, this is the scapegoating the rest of the world for what really happened at the hands of American corporations and American business and American financial elites on Wall Street. This whole thing about China and Mexico stealing American jobs, that's not what happened. American corporations relocated them because they wanted to drive a stake in the heart of unions. They wanted to maximize their profits in the short term. This was America doing it to – I mean, this was Americans doing it to Americans. This was not the world doing it to America. And that kind of blaming the other – is something that you could say it's populism, but then that starts to get into something a little bit more ominous than populism.
Well, I'll tell you a couple of things that are really astounding to me. One of the really early supporters of Donald Trump was Jeff Frantz, on whose show I appear happily every month. And he has a guy on the show. His name is Jay Widener, who is very, very interesting fellow. And they have been talking about numerologically how the gods or God or whoever is in charge of the universe has divinely implanted Donald Trump into the White House, which is beyond all total reason. And these are two really intelligent men. How on earth could they have vacated their thoughts to get into numerology and saying that Donald Trump is a divine? Because it is obvious, if he has a cabinet, he has, there is no way they will let him totally reconstruct pharma so that we can buy it easily and cheaply as they do in Mexico and Canada. And there, maybe he's brought back a couple of jobs from Carrier or Ford or something like that. But there is no way that I think they could let him repeal NAFTA totally.
Well, and here's an interesting thing. Jeff Rentz and this other gentleman share that feeling about sort of the divine hand at work in Trump's presidency with Franklin Graham and Mike Pence. So strange bedfellows. I think one of the interesting things to watch with Trump's presidency are the fissures between his agenda and the Congress that is run by the GOP. The people in Congress are mostly free traders. They are mostly pro corporation. They are staunchly pro corporation. They love the idea of him saying, "Hey, we want to get rid of 75% of all regulations." They like that. But then he says, "I don't want to touch entitlements." They don't like that. Paul Ryan, he's like an objectivist kid in an Ayn Randian candy store. He cannot wait to privatize every aspect of American governance, including Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security. Now, is Trump going to allow that to happen? Because Trump has promised people he will not allow that to happen. Because in many ways, Trump is just a hyper-nationalist Bernie Sanders on a lot of these issues. So you know, this is where people would say he's a little bit socialism and he's very nationalist. I don't want to make the connection there, but there's nationalist and socialism. Anyway, so that butting of heads is one of the interesting things to watch over the next 100 days. And this is why Mike Pence is actually the Dick Cheney of this administration. He is the most important person in Trump's administration. And Mike Pence is actually the reason why I think Trump was elected, because what Mike Pence did was say, basically was a signal to all the evangelicals, don't worry, God will be in the White House with you. Don't worry. Anything that Donald Trump wants to do will be mitigated by our traditional evangelical hyper-conservatism. And that is also the signal that's being sent into the Congress. And Pence is the point man on getting things done in Congress. And I can tell you there are a lot of people that I've talked to who think that what is really happening is the thing that's going on with Michael Flynn, who's going to be NSA director, and the investigation into his contacts between him and Russia, that could be the thin edge of the wedge to do what? Sometime in the next year and a half lead to a President Mike Pence, which would be a dream scenario for the Republicans in Congress.
Well, I think you may be absolutely right. I read a few days ago, president of one of the cable networks said that 74% of all the revenue came from pharmaceutical companies, and went on to say, if I had a host who put on somebody who spoke against pharmaceuticals, I would fire the host. If I were Donald Trump and in a position to make some kind of public position about pharmaceuticals, you know, in Europe, you cannot advertise pharmaceuticals on television. I would say no pharmaceutical will be advertised on American television that has to advertise side effects for 75% of the commercial.
Yeah, that'd be the end of the pharmaceutical
advertising. That would be the end of pharmaceuticals. I mean, it is totally criminal what pharmaceuticals are getting away with, and totally criminal what the media is doing to us by allowing these commercials on the air.
Look, think of the revenue stream that is for the media, and this was actually something that was warned. This goes, David Kessler, is that right? Was it Ronald Kessler or David Kessler? I can't remember his first name, Kessler. He was years ago, before he became Surgeon General and then became Surgeon General, warned against DTC advertising, direct-to-consumer advertising. And the DTC advertising is what has created the pharmaceutical industry that we have today. And what DTC, direct-to-consumer advertising, does is they find a drug. And because every drug has a 10-year patent life, right? For 10 years, if you discover a drug, once it gets approved, you own that drug for 10 years. And then after that, it can go to generics. And so what they've done is they've worked with marketing to take extant drugs and extend the life of the patent by finding new uses for existing drugs so that they can extend the life of the patent of the drug and then sell more drugs, which is why you start ending up with weird things like Latisse for underperforming eyelashes. What is an underperforming eyelash? I mean, I guess if dust gets in your eyes all the time, your eyelashes are not performing properly. But other than that, well, they get Brooke Shields to sell it, and it was a drug. The drug was not originally designed scientists didn't sit around and say, gosh, we have to do something about underperforming eyelashes. No, underperforming eyelashes was a condition that was invented to extend the life of a different drug, and they turned it into an eyelashes drug. And that's how a lot of these drugs get developed, is they are actually drugs that were designed for a different reason, and because they have these side effects, they learn to harness the side effects and turn those side effects into new conditions that they can market.
It is frightening. You know, my computer guru, David Lisby, who designed my site, inherited $500,000 and moved out of the country because he said it was just not the country that he was born into, which is quite true. But when I hear you talking about these things and I become aware of them, if he were here, here's what I'd do. I would take that great Robert Goulet song, Two Different Worlds, and I would show the 1%, and then I would show the 99%, and I would have Goulet sing that song, Two Different Worlds We Live In, show them how they are living, and show how we're living. And I must tell you, we are living not only in two different worlds, we're living in two different countries.
Yeah, and look, we just saw it last week at Davos where they were all wringing their hands about the problems of inequality over caviar and champagne. So this is really, I think, part of what we're seeing is that the people in the other world, the world other than the luxury bubble where the 1% live, are trying to figure out a way to send a message. And right now, Trump is the guy that captured some of that, but obviously he has a long way to go to be a person of the 99%, because right now he's really only a person of the 45%.
So quite honestly and basically, Joe, what do you see happening in the next year in this country? with
Trump? I think it's a mixed bag. I think he can get a couple victories, and he's going to need some victories. But I think one of the problems is that he is so pugilistic, and you know, this misstep over the weekend with the press about saying things that were patently false about crowd numbers and electric, you know, monitors and that the crowd and all these things, and then having to come up Kellyanne Conway saying, well, we have alternative facts.
Yeah.
That really was a major misstep. And I watched today's press conference when Sean Spicer was magnanimous and self-effacing, and he had a very good press conference. And what he talked about over and again, protecting American workers. They've got to stay on message. This is no longer the campaign. And if they don't stay on message and he doesn't deliver a couple victories, it can go off the rails quickly, particularly if the repeal of Obamacare leaves 8 to 10 million people immediately without health care, and many of those people are in the red states that voted for Donald Trump.
Well, Joe, once again, I want to thank you very, very much. I learned so much listening to you. Everybody loves you. Where can they find your News Vandal?
Just go to newsvandal.com. A little box will pop up. Sign up. The rundowns have never been harder to do. Donald Trump is making a lot of work for me, but you want to know what? It's a really interesting time to be alive, and the rundowns, I think, are a cheat sheet to get you through the news cycle. And John, as ever, my endless joy and pleasure to be your occasional sidekick. And what a great interview you had with Tim Conway Jr. If people are just joining now, go back when this is posted and listen to the whole show, because that was a delight.
Well, thank you so much, Joe. Till next time, as Ed Murray used to say, good night and good luck.
You're my spark of nature's fire. You're my sweet, complete desire. A sunny, 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 I love you.